KALW.
We saved $47 million.
Oh my God, that's like higher than we thought.
Millions of dollars in bonds are on the San Francisco ballot. We'll hear how that money gets turned into public funds.
So everybody sends in their bids. You determine which of the bids is the lowest.
It's like eBay.
Yeah, it could be.
Then what do high schoolers think about video game addiction?
I wouldn't take breaks during my long gaming sessions. I didn't take care of myself, and so my parents had to do so by nagging me to eat and to shower. This wasn't healthy for my body because I gained around like 10 pounds in the few months I did this.
I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Tomorrow, San Francisco voters will decide whether to approve an $845 million bond to improve city college facilities. Bonds can make it on the ballot to fund a variety of things, schools, parks, or even emergency services. So what happens after a bond is approved? What's the process? Well, the money doesn't just show up the next day. The mayor doesn't just walk down to the nearest bank and ask for a loan. Instead, we make the bank come to us. In this story from our archives, reporter Raja Shah explains.
Tiny conference room at City Hall in San Francisco, surrounded by city officials, consultants, lawyers, and we're all staring intently at a flat screen on the wall, watching the end of an online auction. An auction in which some of the biggest banks in the world are competing to lend us money.
You're waiting, you're hoping. There's no disaster.
That's Nadia Sasse, the city's director of public finance. She's already warned me that these auctions go down to the wire. Bids can come in at the last second. But this one is a little too close for comfort.
There's less than a minute remaining.
Are you kidding me?
So yeah, what's going on now?
Nothing.
Not a single bid has come in.
Oh my God.
All right. What is going on here? Allow me to explain. If you've ever shopped around for a student loan or a mortgage on your house, then you can relate to San Francisco's predicament. When it comes to borrowing money, the city wants a good deal. That means a low interest rate. A tiny difference in the interest rate can have a huge impact on how much you have to pay back, your monthly mortgage payment, for example. But unlike you, the city borrows tens, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars at a time. Even just the interest payments on some of the city's loans would be enough to buy several houses in San Francisco, even in this market. The banks, they're on the other side of this transaction. The higher the interest rate, the more money they stand to make. So to make sure it's getting the best deal, the cheapest interest rate on its loan, the city puts out a call, essentially asking banks, how low can you go? Give us your best offer.
And so everybody sends in their bids. And you determine which of the bids is the lowest true interest cost.
It's like eBay.
Yeah, it could be. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Nadia Sasse is the one running this glorified eBay auction. And it really is like eBay. It happens online, there's a deadline, and when the clock hits zero, the bank with the lowest bid wins, and San Francisco gets its loan. It really is as simple as that. At least, most of the time.
Millions now bracing for this monster nor'easter bearing down just as we come on the air. You can see it right over my shoulder here.
A lot of these big banks, they're based in New York.
States of emergency across seven.
And this past January, when this auction was scheduled, New York was sitting in the path of a blizzard.
Here in New York, commuters jamming into the subways, the trains, and for the first time that anyone can remember, New York City subways closing down for the snowstorm.
I actually got a call from Sasse 2 days before the auction. She was thinking of postponing it. If those bankers in Manhattan couldn't get to their desks, it could affect how many bids we got. On the other hand, if we were the only big city looking for a loan on that stormy day, it could actually help. Less competition.
A variable I hadn't contemplated. We've never had this situation before.
Sasse decided to go ahead with the auction. And so I joined her and her team in that conference room in City Hall to watch it all play out.
So now we have 15 minutes. The clock's ticking.
Today would be an especially bad time for anything to go wrong, because this auction is one of San Francisco's biggest in years, $300 million.
It's sizable.
There's a reason this auction is so huge. Instead of taking out a loan for some new project, say a highway or a hospital, we're actually refinancing a bunch of loans spanning the last decade, because interest rates are historically low. It's just like refinancing the mortgage on your house, if your house is $300 million. But the point is that when this kind of money is involved, getting a good interest rate makes an especially big difference. The question on everyone's mind is, what will that interest rate be?
I'm gonna go 2.25.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Sase's guess, 2.25%.
You said 2.30, you said 2.35.
Price and right rolls, and then the lowest can just bid a penny.
That's Vishal Trivedi, an analyst on Sase's team.
So, what do you think?
Slightly pessimistic, I'm gonna say 2.36.
In case you missed that, Trivedi's guess is 0.11% higher than Sase's. That's what gets you branded as a pessimist in this crowd. But here, 0.11% translates to more than $1 million of taxpayer money. And that's why we're having this auction, to squeeze the very best deal out of these giant banks. But the whole plan, it falls apart if nobody actually sends in a bid. Which brings us back to the final countdown.
There's less than a minute remaining.
Are you kidding me?
Yes. 54 seconds to go.
Finally.
Oh, we got one.
We just got one bid.
Oh, it's less than 30 seconds now.
Oh, four. Thank God.
10 seconds. And as the clock hits zero, after all the drama, six bids came in literally at the last minute.
It's done. So refresh one more time and then we'll go to the results.
And the winning bid was about in line with the team's predictions. 2.34%. The winning bidder, J.P. Morgan.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Nadia Sase with the City and County of San Francisco. I'm sure you already know the results. Would like to congratulate you and thank you for a competitive bid.
Thank you very much.
As for what refinancing these loans at this new interest rate means for the city, Vishal Trivedi, the slightly pessimistic analyst, announces the results.
We save $47 million.
Oh my God, that's like higher than we thought.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's exciting.
$47 million. That's how much will go back into city coffers because of this auction. And to be clear, underneath this whole process is a lot of complexity. Between the end of the auction and arriving at that 47 million number, a room full of analysts were typing away furiously on their laptops for an hour, crunching numbers. But for Sase, apart from the math, economics, finance, this auction is part of a bigger picture.
We fund libraries, parks, and you get to see what you were part of.
Building those libraries and parks, it's a long and complicated process. But at the start of it is a small group of people in a tiny conference room on the third floor of City Hall, hitting the refresh button on a computer and watching the clock. In San Francisco, I'm Raja Shah for Cross Currents.
That story was originally reported in July 2015, and tomorrow is Super Tuesday. We'll be bringing you live coverage of Bay Area ballot results starting at 8 p.m., so tune in. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we're going to drop the latest episode of TBH, our newest podcast. I'll hand it over to the host, Oakland's youth poet laureate, Samuel Gattacho.
This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds. Today, we'll be talking about video games. Our generation has been raised with them. In fact, almost two-thirds of our parents play them. And the invention of the cell phone brought an entirely new wave of accessibility. I remember playing Snake on my cousin's Nokia and begging my mom to play Tetris on her old flip phone back when I couldn't have been older than 5 or 6. And when my older godbrother got an iPod, I was so envious of his ability to tune out at family functions and play games for hours that I saved up to buy my own iPod Touch around the age of 9 or 10. I'd find endless entertainment in Temple Run or Jetpack Joyride, and when I say endless, I really mean endless. No matter how much I played, any new level or achievement in the game would bring addictive gratification. In the 5th and 6th grade, my best friend Diego and I were absolutely obsessed with Minecraft. We'd go over to my house after school every day and play for hours until he had to be picked up. And when he left, I'd keep playing until my allocated screen time for the day ran out. I personally enjoyed Minecraft, and still do, because of the creative aspect. I used to want to be an architect when I grew up, and it was indescribably satisfying for me to be able to create anything I wanted in this fantasy world. And so, a few years of my life were consumed by Minecraft. Until one year in middle school, when two of my best friends asked for PlayStation 4s with Star Wars Battlefront for Christmas in a coordinated effort. After Battlefront came Rocket League, and then Fortnite, which would devour all of my friends' waking hours well into high school. And soon it'll be something new. Gaming commanded so much of my friends' time that I ended up getting a console just so that I wouldn't feel left out. Never mind the fact that I didn't actually enjoy playing that much. I don't consider myself a gamer. I don't tend to enjoy very many things that I'm not good at, and I'm typically quite bad at video games, so unless I'm with my friends, I tend to avoid them. But even within my intentionally limited experience, video games have permeated so much of my life. And they can be a great way to bring people together and bring joy to our lives, as long as we're the ones in control. But what are the consequences if we start to let video games dominate our lives? We'll turn to our panel of high school students to see what they've got to say.
My name is Kyle Yee, and I am a junior at Lincoln High School. I became addicted to video games when I got my phone. It got to the point where I would find excuses to be by myself and play on my phone. One day, I was walking home from school and decided to play one of my favorite games, Clash of Clans. The moment I took out my phone to play, it seemed as if the world around me disappeared and I was sucked into the game. My perception for the real world was gone, and I started to walk across the street without even knowing it. All that my mind was focused on was the game, but I was able to hear the cars driving by with the wind hitting my face. I finished crossing the busy road as I came to a stopping point in my game. I turned around and noticed for the first time that I could have died. The street was racing with cars going roughly 45 miles per hour, none of them checking for crossing pedestrians. Since then, I cured my addiction to my phone, and I haven't been playing video games as much anymore.
My name is Matthew Wei, and I'm a junior at Lincoln High School. I was once addicted to playing video games and getting fake in-game items. I wouldn't take breaks during my long gaming sessions. I didn't take care of myself, and so my parents had to do so by nagging me to eat and to shower. This wasn't healthy for my body because I gained around like 10 pounds in the few months I did this. And I was completely oblivious of how I changed. When I looked in the mirror, I noticed this wasn't me, and this was the shell of my former self.
My name's Nick Rossi. I attend Galileo High School, and I'm 15 years old. I was addicted to video games, in particular Counter-Strike. I have over 2,000 hours on Counter-Strike, and I've spent well over $400 on the game. At that point, it isn't a game anymore. It's a lifestyle. My gaming life increased, my social life decreased. I had a lot of acne, I didn't care about my personal hygiene, and my teeth were very yellow. I used to bully people online a lot. I even got in trouble for it, and I had to go to Saturday school for my middle school.
My name is Desmond Wong. I am a sophomore at Burton High School. Though gaming has overall been a positive experience for me, there have been some negatives. And these negatives not only frustrated me, but put me at risk of my privacy and my time. A time I was at risk was when I was playing a shooter game and another player in my game was getting very aggravated for me. He begins arguing with me, which leads to us getting into a Skype call together to finish the arguing. He was able to take my IP address, which was a way to shut down my internet and take my private information. My router was fried and I never spoke to him again.
Recently, the World Health Organization declared that obsessive gamers suffer from a new addiction called video game disorder. Some psychologists fired back, arguing that this diagnosis ignores more serious mental health problems. San Francisco teenager Jiahao Chen forced himself to quit video games. But then his friends got too busy playing games to spend time with him. So he wanted to find out, Are his friends just having fun playing Fortnite? Or can zealous gaming really be an addiction?
Up until a few months ago, I loved video games. But I didn't just love gaming. I was obsessed. I remember racing home every day after school to play League of Legends. I gamed for hours and hours every day, up until at least midnight. In League of Legends, I had a mission. It was up to me to help my virtual team destroy the towers, guarding the enemy's base. My purpose every day was to climb the rank ladder, but every morning, I have to go down a few levels, back to the real world. I was so focused on showing off my skills to my team in League of Legends that I barely spent any time doing my homework. I was so tired after gaming all night. Every night, I fall asleep during class. My grades dropped lower and lower until I got a C in algebra.
So those would be the typical signs that there's a disorder or a dysfunction going on.
Thomas Plant, a psychology professor at Santa Clara University, says very few people game to the point of mental and physical self-destruction like I did, but...
For some people, a certain number of people, they can't stop engaging in the behavior even when it's destructive.
Psychologists are divided over whether gaming disorder is a real diagnosis. The World Health Organization, also known as WHO, says it is.
Certainly anything that is obsessive, that interferes with social, occupational, school functioning, and so forth, in a destructive or dysfunctional way, most of us mental health professionals would consider a disorder.
That all sounds pretty bad, but then again, roughly two-thirds of American households play video games. How do you draw a line between an addiction and a hobby?
Well, you know, these things are all designed to be addictive because companies make money to not only sell their product, but keep people engaged in the product.
I forced myself to quit gaming. I started sleeping at night rather than during class. Like magic, my grades went back up again. I rarely play video games anymore. I tried playing League of Legends a few weeks ago, and I hated every second of it. I hope this game will end soon because I just spent like about 34 minutes. One more turn and we win. Oh, we didn't get it, bruh. 35 minutes. So I'm gonna get off right now. I don't like this game anymore. It's kind of boring. But my friends are still obsessive gamers. They are like the extreme version of me back in the day. Sometimes it's hard for us to get in touch and talk to each other because my friends are daydreaming about Fortnite. A few weeks ago, I went over my friend Alfredo Perez's house. He's playing Fortnite again with his friend Christian.
You're garbage, bro.
I'm wrong, bro. Hello, right?
Finding secret battles, though.
You're hating. Well, I started playing video games when I was about 7 years old on a Game Boy, which was a gift from my grandma. That's where I spent most of my childhood playing on.
Even now, while I'm trying to talk to him for this story, he keeps playing.
I'll say I'm partially addicted, but not really, because I could stop playing if I wanted to. I just play a lot right now. If I didn't play video games, I'd probably be outside or just be sleeping doing nothing.
Or he could hang out with me. Lately, he won't pick up the phone when I call him. When I text him, he doesn't reply. I think that's because he's playing video games. But even though I feel distant from him, he says games help him make friends online.
I like Fortnite because it's trending and you have to use teamwork to win. I think it helps build relationships with people because you can interact with them and just like having to work together to reach a goal.
I'm not a psychologist. I don't know if my friends are addicted to video games. Christopher Ferguson, a psychologist at Stetson University, says blaming video games is often just a way to avoid talking about deeper issues.
It's funny, like we really, really enjoy consuming media. At the same time, we really, really enjoy blaming media for all the problems we have, you know?
He says the small percentage of gamers who overdo screen time often show signs of other mental health problems, like depression or anxiety.
The evidence we have suggests it's really not so much that games do this to people. We really need to focus more on the issue that these individuals have these underlying mental health conditions, not so much focusing on the idea that games are causing these problems.
Even if my friends really are just having fun playing Fortnite, I still wish they were easier to reach. Ferguson doesn't have a solution for me, but he has some advice.
It's just to open up a conversation about that, you know, to say like, you know, hey, we used to do a lot of other things. Yeah, I kind of miss that.
Or he says, find some new friends.
Friends who may be able to, you know, spend time with you offline if that's not being met with the current batch of friends.
But I am not sure if I am ready to talk to my friends about their gaming habits. It is difficult to reach them because they are always playing video games.
That story was reported by Jihao Chen. He graduated from San Francisco's Galileo High School last year. I find one of the perspectives that Jihao's story brought super interesting, the perspective of video game addiction as a symptom of a greater issue rather than a standalone problem caused by the games themselves. Because I genuinely don't think that the games themselves are the problem. I know plenty of teenagers who play video games in moderation simply for entertainment. But if you look at excessive gaming as a potential unhealthy coping mechanism, just like binge eating or substance abuse, then it becomes easier to look at the greater underlying issue. And I think that it also helps us to maintain compassion, because it can be easy to look down on kids with gaming addictions until you consider them in that context. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Samuel Getacho.
Thanks, Samuel. TBH reporters were trained and edited by Holly J. McDeed and Kristen McCandless. Support for TBH comes from the California Arts Council, Cal Humanities, and the Association for Continuing Education. TBH episodes drop weekly on Monday. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast player. And there's no Cross Currents podcast tomorrow, but tune into KLW at 8 p.m. for special coverage from our news team. We'll bring you updates and analysis on Bay Area elections. You can listen on the radio or at KALW.org. And let's wrap it up with some local music. This is Floral from Oakland, and they're playing at Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco on Friday. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, Truk Nguyen, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.